Red Light Blues on the CD The Bunk Project by the New York Jazz Ensemble with Woody Allen Clarinet. Recordings that were made for the documentary film about Woody Allen's clarinet playing tour of Europe called Wild Man Blues. One of the central questions and controversies swirling around Bunk Johnson is whether or not he was in the band of New Orleans' first jazz trumpeter, Buddy Bolden, the man who fused blues, ragtime, and the music for all occasions of New Orleans into jazz. During my 1993 interview with Harold Drobb, I was eager for his opinion.
The Bolden Band obviously set New Orleans on fire at one point, whether it was 1895, whether it was 1900, whenever it was. Certainly by 1900, he was the big thing, he and his band. I don't know what year Bunk played with Bolden, but I do know he played with Bolden. The reason I know is that I've seen the interview that Charles Edward Smith did with Willie Cornish. Willie Cornish was the trombone player in the Bolden Band. And Cornish said, Bunk put on long pants to go out with the Bolden Band. End of report.
This is probably sometime in the 1890s, or who knows?
Unfortunately, he wasn't asked what year was that.
It's almost certain that as a youngster, Bunk hung out with the band and copied Bolden. Eyewitness Danny Barker says he was known as Little Bunky Johnson and was like a mascot for Bolden. Little Bunky sat in when Buddy was otherwise occupied, drinking, carousing, or entertaining female companions. Bunk even modeled some of his mannerisms on Bolden and, like the King, cultivated a following of young female admirers. Later, after Bolden went insane, trombonist Frankie Doosan took over Bolden's outfit, renamed it Eagle Band, and according to Barker, often hired Bunk because he could play just like Bolden and knew the band's songs.
There were people in and out of that band like there were other bands. Fixed bands were relatively unknown throughout much of the history there. A guy got a gig and he went out and hired people. Yeah. They were interchangeable.
Later in the 1940s, while being interviewed during his rediscovery, Johnson rather exaggerated his role in Bolden's band. You see, Bolden's greatest fame was sometime between 1899 and 1905, while Johnson, born in 1889, according to reliable research, would have been a youngster in short pants. So it seems that Bunk told researchers he was born some 10 years earlier. This and many other exaggerations that were subsequently disproved, such as his claim to have played for Queen Victoria on a visit to England, led many to question Bunk's veracity and dismiss his story outright. But continued investigations, and even the research of Johnson detractors, like the definitive biographer of Bolden, Donald Marquis, do place young Bunk Johnson in proximity to Bolden and show him playing a significant role in New Orleans jazz, though a few years later, around 1910.
Donald Marquis, who wrote the definitive book about Buddy Bolden, I don't know if you're familiar with the book.
In Search of Buddy Bolden.
In Search of Buddy Bolden. He says Bunk never played with Bolden.
Yeah, he says it quite emphatically.
He says they could have checked it with Cornish. Well, the fact is they had the information from Cornish. As to how well these people read music or didn't read music, Bunk said he was the only one in the Bolden band who could read music. Most people seem to think that Bolden couldn't read music, but whether he could or he couldn't, or whether he was faking that he couldn't read music. But I think sometimes these guys tried to say that because they didn't want to be bothered with rehearsals and written music and all the rest of that.
Well, critical of Bunk, Donald Marquis admits that Johnson's tales about Bolden are evidently true enough. Marquis quotes musicians who were contemporaries of Bolden, saying that Bunk got his style following Buddy, but could never play rough and loud like Bolden, but nonetheless was a better musician. This was echoed by Louis Armstrong, who said that, quote, Bolden had the biggest reputation, but he just played loud. Bunk Johnson was different. He could play funeral marches that would make you cry. In the end, I believe that Johnson's boldest claim to have been an integral partner in the Bolden Band is unsupportable for two reasons. One, his age. He was born in 1889, not 1879 as he claimed. Johnson was but a youngster at the time of Bolden's greatest fame. And two, Bolden's band was not a two-trumpet band. A man of Buddy's swaggering ego would probably not have wanted to share the limelight. Yet despite exaggerating his role in early New Orleans, Bunk Johnson did learn his early style from the legendary Buddy Bolden. Plus, Bunk had a distinct subtlety of musicianship and depth of training lacking in Bolden. He also generously mentored fledgling trumpeters like Louis Armstrong and Lee Collins, just as he himself had been encouraged by King Bolden. Thus, he is truly a link between Buddy Bolden and Louis Armstrong. Today, it's the recordings of Bunk Johnson that give us the strongest hints of what the legendary Buddy Bolden sounded like. Harold Drobb.
When he says this is like Bolden, I suppose we have to assume that that's the best we're going to get. There are other people, though, who say that Keppert played like Bolden. Now, Keppert and Bunk don't play exactly alike, but I hear Bunk and Keppert. And Keppert's brother said that Bunk was the only trumpet player Keppert was afraid of in New Orleans. Lee Collins has told me the same thing.
So do you think when Bunk says, Bolden played it like this, that we're getting the real picture?
Well, several of the people that were interviewed did say that Bunk was the most like Bolden. It was the kind of statement, Bunk was the most like Bolden and Louis was the most like Bunk.
Fortunately, this famous 1943 Bolden medley recorded by Johnson is probably the closest we'll ever get to hearing Bolden's concept of melodic interpretation and variation. Thank you. wow, I've always loved that Bunk Johnson recording of a Bolden medley based on Make Me a Pallet on the Floor. It's an extraordinary historic document. I'm Dave Radlauer, rediscovering Bunk Johnson on Jazz Rhythm with an interview of Harold Drobb done in 1993. To New Orleans jazz enthusiasts, Bunk Johnson's rediscovery seemed especially significant because of his links to both Louis Armstrong and Buddy Bolden. It was Armstrong who first set jazz researchers on the trail to Johnson, acknowledging Bunk as one of his teachers and among the kings of early New Orleans trumpet. Favorably comparing Bunk Johnson to Buddy Bolden, Armstrong told researchers that Bolden had the bigger reputation but just played loud, saying that he didn't really know how to play his horn right, and praising Johnson for, quote, the most beautiful tone, the best imagination, and the softest sense of phrasing. In New Orleans around 1911 or so, Bunk had mentored young trumpeters like Lee Collins and Louis Armstrong, though it wasn't formal training, but a kind of show and tell. Further research has revealed that in the mid-20s, when Louis developed his own style independently of King Oliver, he went back to some of what he'd learned from Bunk, playing open horn, not muted like Oliver, introducing subtle variations in timing and melody, and harmonic variations based on minor and diminished chords that he'd learned in part from Bunk. And it was Bunk who first introduced Louis to Sidney Bechet. Bechet, in his autobiography, describes how around 1913, Bunk snuck Armstrong into the club he was playing and hid him behind the piano so Louis could watch and learn. But sadly, for reasons that are unclear, after initially embracing Bunk Johnson publicly as his early teacher, Louis recanted, reverting to his story that King Oliver was his main influence. Harold Drobb.
One time in New York, I was with Bunk and we went to hear Bechet at Jimmy Ryan's. And afterwards, we went out to have some coffee, and we're sitting and talking, and Bunk was complaining to Sidney about Louis Armstrong denying that Bunk had taught him. And Sidney said, I saw you teach the boy, but if he wants to deny you, there's nothing you can do about it. At that point, that kind of settled it for me. Here was somebody claiming to be an eyewitness.
Oddly, it was at about the same time of Bunk's reemergence in the early 40s that Louis began again playing New Orleans-style music and repertory. Now, I want you to please listen closely to what comes next. It's a brief moment of glory when Bunk and Louis appeared playing together on a broadcast. It goes by very quickly, and it's merely a fragment, but what a thrilling moment. During a broadcast from New Orleans in 1945, Bunk Johnson and Louis Armstrong jamming together on Basin Street Blues.
Appeared by courtesy of Club Zanzibar in New York, will appear later on the program with Benny Goodman in New York and Duke Ellington in Los Angeles. This portion of Esquire's All-American Jazz Concert has come to you through station WDSU from New Orleans. This is the Blues Network.
Wow, such an exciting thing. Bunk Johnson, Louis Armstrong, Sidney Bechet, trombonist J.C. Higginbotham, and James P. Johnson on piano, broadcasting from New Orleans in 1945. After his last recordings made for Drobb in late 1947, Bunk returned to New Iberia, Louisiana. He tried unsuccessfully to organize further jobs and concerts in the North. In late 1948, Bunk Johnson's health and spirits declined rapidly, and he had at least one stroke before his death. On July 7, 1949, the night before he died, Bunk's longtime bassist, Slow Drag Pavajo, had a dream in which Bunk told him to pack his trunk because they were going on a long trip. Long after Bunk's death, Harold Drobb also saw to Johnson's headstone. Bunk was initially buried in an unmarked grave, and Bill Russell in the 1970s had organized creation of a headstone, but it was not in place until Drobb's visit in 1979, when he helped locate Bunk's grave and get the headstone properly placed.
I certainly like what I hear from Bunk Johnson, and I think probably a lot of the people listening are very grateful to hear another perspective on a very significant artist in the history and formation of jazz music.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I think as time has gone by, the respect for him to some degree has grown. People are coming to recognize that there is something different happening. Now, even the people who are the greatest George Lewis admirers still think the George Lewis with Bunk records are the greatest records. They might talk about the records with Kid Howard or the records with other people, but ultimately it boils back down to the records with Bunk. Well, Bunk must have an important part to play in that.
Well, he's a very sensitive musician, and you know, we have to bear in mind that, particularly in the early recordings, he had not been playing for some time. He'd had trouble with his teeth. He was not properly recorded. He was often in situations that weren't optimum for him as a performer.
Well, all these things entered into it.
You had a very clear idea of wanting to present Bunk in a full dimension. I think sometimes he gets seen as a one-dimensional character.
Yes, I think so too, and more of a caricature than a complete person. He was a meticulous person. Everything had to be organized and in order. As you were talking about his solos, this was characteristic of the man. When he came to work at the Stuyvesant Casino, there was an upright piano. He would take off his coat and very carefully fold it and put it on top of the piano, put his hat on top of it, set up his music stand. Even though he was playing with people who are non-readers, he had a lot of music that he set out on the stand. He had his Kleenex, his valve oil, his lip salve. Everything belonged in a certain place. Just like the music, everything belonged in a certain place. But as I say, he was meticulous and systematic in his general behavior. When he cooked, everything was done very carefully and systematically there also. He cooked rice all the time. Rice was his staple, as one would expect coming from Louisiana. And in those days, when you bought rice, rice didn't come as clean as it does these days. And he'd spend endless time picking over that rice and picking out all the little stones and all the little grains and everything. And all the time we'd be telling little stories and we'd be talking about different things. He was fun. He could capture you very easily.
Harold, I'm very glad that you took the time out. We've been talking about this for some time. And thank you, Harold. Harold okay. Drobb, talking about Bunk Johnson.
Well, thank you. I very much appreciate this opportunity.
The rediscovery of Bunk Johnson offered important insights to early jazz and the importance of ragtime and popular tunes to early New Orleans music. On the one hand, his formal skills and penchant for ragtime embody the legitimate side of the music as played from the written page somewhat properly by the Creoles and marching bands, while on the other hand, his hot music follows from the loosely improvised blues and jazz played for dancing and made wildly popular around the turn of the century by Buddy Bolden. Bunk Johnson's rediscovery helped revive the careers of some wonderful musicians like George Lewis and trombonist Jim Robinson, and was a huge boost to the growing worldwide New Orleans jazz revival that continued for decades. I'm very grateful to the late Harold Drobb for his excellent insights during our 1993 interview, taped at radio station KALW in San Francisco. Harold passed away in 2003, but his interviews, research, and papers are preserved at the Library of New Iberia, Louisiana, Bunk Johnson Archive. Jazz Rhythms produced by Rhythm Productions, specializing in professional transfer and restoration of rare tapes and discs. The Jazz Rhythm website is jazzhot.bigstep.com. Finally, here's one more excellent recording of Bunk with Sidney Bechet in 1945, the Mylenburg Joys. That's Jazz Rhythm, rediscovering Bunk Johnson. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for listening. Thank you.